Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Anthony Herron's brought to you by Cassidy Tire and Service. He is here with us to talk football. Anthony, how are you?
I'm feeling football-y. There's a lot of football in my life these days. There's all kind of football going on in my world, so it's a football-ish Tuesday for me.
Yeah, congrats on the new gig, by the way.
That is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. You and Jason Goff at Sirius XM talking Big Ten.
I've never launched anything, I've never launched a channel before. I've probably launched projectiles and whatnot, but it's my first time being involved with a channel. From its infancy, from day one, we had our first caller today on Sirius XM channel 372, and he wanted to talk Indiana football, which kind of caught us off guard this morning. But we did it. You know, Indiana's one of the 27 Big Ten teams, so they deserve discussion if their fan base would like to have it, and we had it.
Really happy for the both.
That's
of you
awesome.
And wishes
a
great deal of success.
Thank you.
The Bears lose, but people seem to be better with it than the other losses, I guess, just not as painful. Where are you on the outcome and how they got there?
I mean, it's the Patriots, so most folks thought they would lose. I think that adds to the comfort level that people have with, you know, you can hold on to that last glimpse of Kevin White coming down with the Mitchell Trubisky heave and think, oh, if it was just one more yard, it was going to overtime. I don't think they were going to win it if it was in overtime either. They weren't executing at the level that the Patriots were, even though they are a more gifted roster. And that to me is something that doesn't mean as much yet as it will as the season continues, because, you know, as much flack, rightfully so, as Ryan Pace got for a while, the Bears are taking the field with the most competitive roster they've had in years, and quite often have been the more talented team on the field. The thing that we need to continue to have patience with is that the offensive system is new, and, you know, there's a lot of these young guys and this and that. So for right now, that still works and that still makes sense, and that still has to be a part of how we evaluate the team. But physically, just from a gift standpoint, they were the more capable team physically than New England. So that shows you the bar of execution for where the Bears, once they do actually approach a championship level, need to try and attain, because they most certainly weren't there on Sunday.
Anthony, you're a man who got after quarterbacks. You're a man who once took down Tom Brady. You even tweeted the evidence out.
That's a hell of a picture, by the way.
That really
is. You kept the receipts.
I did, yeah. It's actually, my wife got, there's several still photos of it where it's like me beating Jeff Backus around the corner.
Oh, you beat Jeff Backus too?
Yeah,
oh, hell yeah.
Then it's Brady trying to run away, just lumbering laterally, and then me diving behind him. So there's a nice photo sequence that's up on my wall.
You should get them to sign
somewhere.
It.
You know what? There's that one. There's a good Drew Brees one where I'm like diving into the air, trying to bat down a Drew Brees pass against Purdue from back in the day. That's one that I should definitely get Drew to sign.
He'd probably do it.
Yeah, Drew would do it. Tom's kind of he's a surlier guy.
Yeah, probably not so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth a try. He may sign it. But Drew, I think, would sign it. I should try that.
Did the Bears get after Tom Brady in a way that anybody would have expected? Did they do anything that you thought was curious in terms of scheme? Because they couldn't find him. They didn't put a whole lot of pressure on him. They did when they brought six. They got a sack there. They're dropping Floyd and Mac into coverage. I'm still curious about it. I'd be interested to see Vic Fangio or hear Vic Fangio talk about it tomorrow. What'd you think?
I thought schematically the Bears did, I think, some things really well the other day schematically. What irked me throughout the game was coming out of the game against Miami from the week before, where we saw so many missed tackles, and it wasn't necessarily the Bears being out of position. They were just repeatedly missed tackles and guys just falling off of little tiny receivers who certainly became like made of goop and just slid through guys' hands. So that was Miami. But then the other day, schematically, they were in position to play the screen pass. I mean, it seemed like they were aware that folks are going to go to more of the quick game and the Patriots are going to try to beat us laterally. And the pursuit angles were all out of whack and there were still some missed tackles. It wasn't as bad as Miami, but Yeah, I would say, you know, I told you guys last week after the Miami game, I'm not looking at the fourth quarter as an issue yet. And I would say at this point, I'm still not going to look at just the fourth quarter as an issue. But missed tackles are now, to me, becoming far more of a concern, because to tackle as well as they did through the first few games, that's not something that should get worse throughout the season. Missed tackles should either maintain a certain level of excellence or improve throughout the year. And this is two games in a row where the Bears haven't tackled well.
So it would be fair to say that if Fangio's scheme coming into this was to set up and keep things in front of you, keep things in coverage, mm-hmm. you know, follow your pursuit angles, it'd be fair to say that had he assumed they'd tackle better, that scheme works.
Yes.
Simple enough.
I didn't see anything schematically that I felt like the Bears should have been doing differently, because when, you know, the lack of pressure would immediately lead your mind to the thought of how do we pressure the quarterback at a higher level. So since our one-on-one pass rushers aren't getting home, Akeem Hicks didn't rush quarterback that well. Obviously, we know Khalil Mack hasn't rushed it like the Khalil Mack we saw from earlier in the season in the last 2 weeks. So you think, well, is it worth blitzing? So they did some blitzing. If you're going to blitz a Tom Brady, though, then you're putting Kyle Fuller and Prince and Mukamara with his gimpy hamstring and the secondary in general, you're putting them in space with very elusive receivers, with these guys who hit their mark so effectively. One of the things that's underrated, and I think it's something Matt Nagy alluded to a bit about how he feels like Mitchell Trubisky didn't throw the ball as badly as the numbers would indicate or some of the errant passes would indicate, because the Patriots receivers and tight ends, they hit their landmarks, and Brady tends to get the ball out on time. When he does, that sets up run after catch when he's throwing with that level of accuracy. Whereas conversely, when the Bears receivers are either 2 yards more shallow than their route should be or aren't coming out of their breaks in the manner that they should, then in addition to obvious confusion for Mitchell Trubisky, that's part of why passes can be errant or off target, because the targets he's trying to throw to aren't where there should be. And those aren't problems you see the Patriots having at receiver, where it comes out where it should, when it should, and the man receiving the ball is in the position he's supposed to be. And it also sets up that level of run after catch, because now the defense doesn't have that extra beat, that extra millimoment to get themselves corralled around the ball carrier. That's why offensive timing and rhythm is so important, because there's still going to be 11 bodies on defense. There's still going to be a bunch of guys chasing you, but how quickly can you maneuver the football from the center to the quarterback's hands and to a position where someone has space to operate? And a lot of offenses that don't have great quarterback play or don't have an offensive coordinator who schemes it correctly can't put the ball in someone's hands in space. So then it's just about, well, let me throw it up to some really big guy and force him to make a play, which, as we've seen with the Atlanta Falcons, that can only take you so far as well.
Boiling it down to a point of probable oversimplification, the Bears' Tariq Cohen run game outside zone, the Jordan Howard run game inside zone. What's wrong with both of those right now?
My big concern with the Bears' run game is that I feel like the personality of their personnel up front has proven over the last two seasons before Matt Nagy got here that they're very effective with a vertical charge from the offensive line and a running back in Jordan Howard who gets more and more effective throughout the game as he's able to lean on defenses. I don't feel like Tariq Cohen's portion of the run game hasn't been executed that well. I feel like it's been called a bit too much, both with Cohen, with Taylor Gabriel, just the lateral aspect of the Bears' run game and the sort of, I would say, over-coordinated portion of how they want to out-scheme the opposing defense, especially in these short yardage scenarios. Or once we get inside the 10-yard line, and I was tweeting about this during the game the other day, but once the Bears get inside the 10, it's more like Jordan Howard becomes a supplement to their offense and to their run game, as opposed to you have a guy who's a proven battering ram in the NFL and you get to the space of the field where everything is so confined. So we know Trubisky doesn't necessarily read zone coverages that well, and that's a lot of what he'll see once you get inside the 10. And we know he's not always the most accurate guy. So to me, put your offense in the position that suits them best. And we've known for 2 years now, their offensive line blocks short yardage situations well. Jordan Howard runs short yardage situations well. And it's been multiple weeks now where we see them try something tricky on a third down. It doesn't work. Okay, fourth and one. Jordan, get it for us. Or penalty, we don't have to leave the field. Now here we come, Jordan, as opposed to just that can be your thing offensively, and you can still over-coordinate something later on. But to me, the crux of the run game, especially in short yardage, should be what these guys already do well, and just keep it simple.
I know what you're saying. It's almost like, well, here's a chance we can use Jordan.
Fine. Yeah.
Okay.
It almost seems begrudging when they're giving him the ball, and it doesn't need to be a begrudging thing. And I love and respect that. I've covered Mark Helfrich for a long time with all my Pac-12 duties while he was at Oregon. He's a very innovative offensive mind, and we certainly know Matt Nagy is as well. I think they're trying to be too clever in certain situations where it's not necessary, where it's not called for, where you can just trust your big guys just to move their big guys enough, and then your other big guy just put the ball in his hands and let him fall forward for 6 to 9 feet or whatever you may need, and that's going to be enough. And I want to see them trust just that more simplistic element of the run game more. And all the other stuff with Cohen and with Gabriel, and even we do see Jordan Howard, I believe he's become a more effective daylight runner than he was before. I see him improving at that. That's not his best asset, though. Get the guy moving north and south.
Saw two things that you mentioned last week when we were in here on the same play. One was being a little bit too cute inside the 10-yard line, and one was, I think the word you used was frenetic when you were talking about Mitch when he gets inside the red zone. Mm-hmm. It's that play to Bradley Sowell for some reason. I mean, he was all, you know, like, all crazy.
I know you got
weird and just throwing it. That one looked like the one against Miami, where you saw the freneticism in there. Yeah. I'm not sure that the other one was quite that way. I wonder if you saw that, and I wonder if those two near end zone picks felt the same to you in terms of the mistake Mitch made or how he made the mistake.
I addressed this a bit on our postgame show on Fox 32. We do Bears postgame live, and Luke Kennels tosses it out to me and Izzy. And one of the points I made, and I was talking back and forth to Jim Miller about it a little bit, was I felt like Mitch the other day to me looked as calm as he's looked in any game where he's actually gotten some pressure. Now, he wasn't under immense pressure throughout the game, but he held the ball. Now, there's a reason he held the ball. He held the ball because he was confused. You know, New England uses a lot of blended coverages where it's very difficult to read whether it's man or zone.
They play a lot of two-man where they split the field as if it's a Tampa 2 zone coverage, but they're actually playing man underneath. We saw the Packers do that kind of thing to Brandon Marshall in the past.
Yeah, and folks that I talk with and text with around the league, that is certainly the scouting report on Mitch. Blitz him, he's going to get a little frantic. Play zone, and he's going to get a little confused. And he's a young quarterback, and so there are things he can work through with that. But with that being said, the other day, while he was very inaccurate with a number of passes, especially more so in the first half, we saw him progress, I think, in the second half. He seemed to become more comfortable with the way he's delivering the ball. But in the first half, he was errant on a lot of passes. But what I do feel like I saw throughout the game was him being willing to hang in the pocket. And that, to me, is a very important thing for the growth of a quarterback. Because, you know, by comparison, the guy on the opposite sideline, Tom Brady, whether it's the quick game, whether it's, you know, you think back years ago where they were still doing some 7-9-step drops and he's holding the ball for 7 seconds or whatever and he's not running around, there's a level of comfort and calm that's there with the willingness to stand in the pocket that's very important for the growth of a quarterback. I saw Mitch attempting to do that the other day, and that's not something he's always done. Now, he was still, you could tell, he's patting it a little bit and he's holding it and he's not sure what he's looking at. And it's going to be important for him to know what he's looking at a certain point because he kept throwing it into traffic. But just in the minutiae of him mechanically, the willingness to stand there and pat it for a moment.
As long as his eyes are up.
Yes, without dropping his eyes towards the rush or starting to run around before it's necessary, because where he can make some cool plays, and we saw him having a career high in rushing yards, and that's kind of slick and that's kind of nice, that's not sustainable. Especially in this system. So for Mitch, the willingness to stand in the pocket and hang in there and attempt to read the second and third portion of the route tree, that is a very important step that I saw him attempting to make. He's not good at it yet, but just when you're thinking about the minutia of what his role is, he's starting to try to hang in the pocket, and that's an important thing for Mitch to start doing.
Anthony Herron with us in studio on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, brought to you by DEA Take Back Day. Your unused prescription drugs could end up misused or stolen. Keep them safe. Clean them out. Take them back. At DEA's National Prescription Drug Take Back Day, Saturday, October 27th, find a collection site at deatakeback.com. When we come back, I want to address the Bears' upcoming game, which has, because of the way things have fallen, taken on an outsized importance. I believe they're 7-point favorites right now. You have seen Sam Darnold more than others because of your experience with the Pac-10 network. And we're going to talk about this decision that one makes strategically going up against a rookie quarterback and how to balance some things. That's when we return on Bernstein and McKnight with Anthony Herron on The Score. It really isn't that good, but it's always fun when people are just trolling Mike Francesa to entertain themselves. And Sam Darnold is the quarterback of the New York Jets.
Do you think people just call Francesa at home at this point just to troll him?
Well, he's got the app. I think paying $15 a month whatever it is, I think you get his home phone number. At least you should.
Anthony Herron is in with us on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, as he is weekly, one of his many, many jobs. How many jobs you got, man? A lot of jobs. Yeah. So you've seen Sam Darnold as the USC quarterback in your travels with Pac-10 Network, and this game.
I should correct you. Pac-12.
Pac-12 Network. I'm sorry. I'm old.
Old habits. This still Mankato State to him.
This game is a.
Yeah, what was that?
This is a must win for the Bears. If you think the Bears are good, they have played this into an absolute must win game. It is a meaningful game for them. If you are game planning against Sam Darnold as you see him as an NFL quarterback, obviously people blitz him, go after blitz him. There are some people who say if you blitz a young quarterback and he identifies the hot, you've just made it sort of binary for him. You've made it a yes, no, instead of a full diagnostic situation where if you play a little more coverage, maybe you show blitz, back off, you get him to check out of something, and then you make it much harder if you just fill up the areas, as we were talking about the strategy against Trubisky. What do you do if you're the Bears?
I'm going to answer that question, but what I think is even more vital than handling the Sam Darnold passing attack just in a vacuum is the Bears have to make them one-dimensional. The Bears cannot allow the Jets to run the football, because when they have, that's made Sam Darnold that much more comfortable, and they've been able to utilize play action and been able to predetermine what the coverage from the defense will be, because the down and distance is in more of their advantage. So even after Sony Michel left the game the other day and the Patriots were able to start salting the game away with like 7 or 8 run plays in a row and picking up first downs, that's what the Bears can't allow from the Jets. Make them one-dimensional, because Sam Darnold as a volume passer right now, that's a bit beyond his development. But specifically in the vacuum of how do you make him more erratic as a passer, to force the issue with a blitz consistently against a guy like Darnold could be a mistake, because he is extremely gifted with the off-script play. He's starting to transition into a guy mechanically who's more sound from the pocket, who reads and gets it out on time in a way that's not necessarily predetermined by his play caller. A lot of times they'll try to call him into an easy first read, and he's great at that. He's very accurate. He's got a really quick release. But to consistently blitz a Sam Darnold, at a certain point, his natural point guard sort of playmaking ability takes over, and he's beyond next level with, as he's extending the play, his ability to throw off platform, to throw from different arm slots, and to get the ball to playmakers from an angle and at a time that doesn't seem like a quarterback should be able to get it there. And he's very good at that. So I do think, the blitz game should be used, but more in a dietary manner. Okay. I'm fine with coverage against Darnold, because he didn't have to read coverages that well in college. He was a first read, second read max, and then get it out. He was just such an accurate passer, and he could fit it in so many windows. And when he did extend the play and cut the field down, all those things worked well. I don't need to see constant blitzing against Darnold. I need defensive backs in position to pick off passes that he is willing to throw into tight windows. He will give 50-50 ball opportunities to the Bears secondary. He's not, where we see Mitch, and like last year we're thinking, Mitch, just go out there and wing it and throw it at him and, take some chances. Darnold is willing to take as many chances as he can, and he doesn't care about interceptions. The Bears will need to be in position to take advantage of that.
The whole thing becomes a lot more simple for Vic Fangio if Khalil Mack plays at 100%. It's a lot easier to go rush somebody. It's a lot easier to go get him.
Vic can take a nap if Khalil Mack is Khalil Mack.
I hope it's that easy for him. I do. It doesn't look like that's going to be the case. What sorts of thing? I don't know, maybe you've been in the position where you've got to argue your case, or maybe you've got to tell a coach that, hey, I'm not there and I can't do this, I can't do that. We saw him drop into coverage. which to me implies, and I could be wrong, but to me implies that he's got some level of health to him, that he's got some sort of comfortability with his own ankle. You think at some point it has to be an earlier, better than later, sit down Khalil Mack for a week?
It's a valid question. It's a real concern. I think the numbers that Pro Football Focus had coming out of the game were out of the times he was on the field in a passing scenario, he rushed 16 times and dropped 18 times is what PFF came up with. Here's the issue with Khalil Mack. It's twofold. One, you're paying the guy, what, nine figures or whatever it is to be on the field making some sort of play for you. Obviously, the main focus of that playmaking ability is him rushing the quarterback.
Right.
So you want that guy on the field because you've invested a lot in him, and there are still things that they can try to take advantage of schematically with him being out there. Khalil Mack standing anywhere near the line of scrimmage, offensive protections pay attention to that. So you still have an opportunity to dictate the protection, to dictate the slide, to dictate the matchup in a lot of different scenarios. Now, at a certain point as the game wears on and you get comfortable with your tackle handling him one-on-one, or get comfortable that a quick chip from the tight end, you know, and then he releases on a route and then they'll be fine with him, then maybe you're not dictating as much by the time you get to the fourth quarter after they're comfortable that Khalil Mack isn't just going to eat your quarterback by leaving him one-on-one or one-and-a-half-on-one like we've seen teams able to do here as of late. But the other part of that is he wants to be on the field. So I don't think you want to put Khalil Mack in a position where he's upset with the coaching staff or feeling like they don't have the type of faith in him. And it's not like there's other hellacious playmakers backing him up. So you take Khalil Mack out of the lineup to get healthy, and then who's your guy? Kylie Fitz?
Isaiah Irving.
Yeah.
I like Isaiah Irving, but come on. I mean, you know, in a 70% Khalil Mack with a shot at some dynamic playmaking. And to me, it's as long as you feel like he is getting healthier, it's one thing if he's out there and he's not himself,
that's
and he's
the
making
issue.
It worse. Yeah, you don't want him making it worse, preferably. But if you feel like week by week he is at least healthier with it as he works through it, I think you leave him in the lineup.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Cats host number 19 Wisconsin this Saturday at Ryan Field. Limited tickets remain. Buy now at nusports.com. What do you think this week's special teams meetings are like?
Surly, maybe?
No fun.
Yeah. And, you know, they shouldn't be. You give up 14 points in that phase of the game. And, you know, as much as we talk about Mitch and we pay attention to what he's doing and what his progression is and wins and losses, like I addressed last week, they're important this year. You know, and I didn't think it was going to matter coming into the year. Then They traded for Khalil Mack. And now wins and losses matter because the Bears said, we're in a window. We're going to try to win. We made this big splash move. So when you're in the window and special teams is giving up not yardage, not big plays, but touchdowns, that's a really big deal. And you look at like Hightower's over there for the Patriots blocking punts. He's not only their best defensive player, but he's blocking punts on teams. So, I mean, they need more and they need better. And you know, I don't think from the history of both the coach and the players who are in positions, I don't think there's any reason to think that special teams won't improve. But it can't be what it was the other day.
Were you a little surprised, going back to the offense a little bit, were you a bit surprised that because Taylor Gabriel was kind of being, I don't know if it's necessarily bracket coverage, but the safety high and then some inside play from a cornerback, and he mentioned after the game that this was tough for him to run routes with, that Trey Burton was, it seemed to be the release in middle yardage, you know, that 15 to 19 range, but it was all over the middle, and none of it, at least I'm not spacing out, and none of it all that dangerous. Mm-hmm. Most of it just kind of, you know, chipping away yardage with Trey Burton.
Well, part of the issue, I mean, Trey Burton's a tight end, so you're only going to get so vertical with him.
Fair.
That was the most effective game he's had this season. You know, I don't even know what the targets were, but it was 9 receptions, over 120 yards. So it was a big game that Burton had, and a lot of his effectiveness is more so in the red zone. I think PFF had him as the most effective red zone tight end in the league last year because of the variety of ways that he got utilized, not only as a route runner. We've seen the shovel pass and some of the different things and his ability to throw the ball, all those things that he does down there that make him such a weapon. So I think vertically, you know, to be able to dictate vertically that Taylor Gabriel is extending the coverage, lengthening the coverage in that manner, you know, I'm not surprised at the level of targets that were there for Trey Burton, but to me, to find a way to get and keep Allen Robinson more involved in that phase of the game on some in cuts on, you know, like you're talking about where Trey Burton's right there. I'm okay with him having big numbers in there, but he's not going to be a guy that threatens the defense vertically, but you can try to get Allen Robinson up the seams, up the hashes in a similar manner.
Is that a sense of playing levels with them as well? I mean, we see that on some, you know, some rollouts and stuff. I think Brady actually had a play kind of like that. The one of the times he moved off his spot, you had a tight end underneath and a wide receiver behind right. him. Is that something
that's you a you very can play? Matt Nagy, Andy Reid?
Mm-hmm. That, feels that way.
That's the know. Alex Smith half field levels concept. That yeah. is a it's a staple of what they do, right?
Right. And overall, the Burton aspect of it, because you know we've kind of been waiting for, and you know Luke and Ellis has asked me a couple of times this season, like, when's Trey Burton going to get a bigger role this season? And he finally did the other day, and I thought he was extremely effective. But it's Mitch being accurate and decisive in throwing it to the other guys in other windows. He held the ball long, so there were passes that came out of his hands late that looked like, why are you throwing it there? Because initially, a receiver is getting ready. Like, there was a couple in the red zone, especially one to Robinson, where there was an opportunity where Robinson was about to declare open, and the about to phase is when Mitch's arm needs to start moving, where that information needs to process from his brain out through his right arm. And before Robinson is actually open, the ball needs to be leaving his hands. And then, you know, the term we tend to use is throwing a guy open. That's where it needs to actually be leaving his hands, as opposed to seeing it. I've got a clear picture. Now I'm going to gun it in there. And now you get two or three bodies around it.
See, he did hit that ball to Robinson against Miami. I mean, that right. ball was out a little bit behind him, so yeah. he could shade him from the linebacker yeah. or protect him from the linebacker. That's that throw you're talking mm-hmm. about. So I guess to a certain degree, at 3-3 with this team and an offense that has shown you quite a number of things, we talked about it yesterday that, you know, at 333 yards, two picks and two scores, that is your worst day for a quarterback this season, and that's a pretty okay day. You know, if you've got that on the fantasy squad, then you're happy with the points you've got. Are you convinced, as you were last week, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, that this scheme and this quarterback can fit together?
Yes, yes. I do think things are progressing, but it's not linear. You know, where, you know, like the point I was making about Mitch being willing to stand in the pocket and not drop his eyes, that gets lost in a game like that, because we do see some of the errant passes. I think there's a variety of reasons for some of those passes being errant, but just flat out, he missed some balls during the game. And so it's like you're watching him work on one thing, but then something else falters a bit. Like, all right, I'm really going to focus on my footwork. I'm really going to focus on hanging in there against the rush. And so now he's focused on that one phase of his game. And so there's not that fluidity to the delivery and to the accuracy. And he's not necessarily playing with feel. You still see him thinking at times. And the progression for him will continue to be getting to the point where everything is muscle memory, where everything yeah. is feel. Whereas right now, you get a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and then it comes together. And it's not necessarily making a great gumbo right now. You just need a few other ingredients to kind of sweeten it up.
It's hard to make a great gumbo. The key is Fila powder.
Fila powder.
I've always said that.
Fila powder, which is a dried and ground sassafras root.
Ah.
That is a fun factoid.
It is. It is. If you really want to make a go, it's not just a soup. It's not just a stew. It is something, and you're a properly created roux.
I had never had gumbo until I went to New Orleans for the first time. Had gumbo, been chasing it ever since.
Yes,
I mean, you should. Nobody does it like that.
Yeah, if you go to Commander's Palace in the Garden District, and you, I don't know if Ant Bites has ever taken you there on a
yes,
trip
I
to
do
Tulane.
The Bayou Classic every year really? For NBC, and when Grambling and Southern are showing up in town, and it's Thanksgiving weekend, the Battle of the Bands is going on, I got all kinds of gumbo and catfish and po' boys and everything
if
I can handle.
If you get the chance to go to Commander's Palace, jacket required, very, very old school right. mansion, yeah. and they do a soup 111 is one of their appetizers. It's three large cups of soup that are delivered to you simultaneously. One is their turtle soup that takes 3 days to make. It is one of the glorious bites you're ever going to have mm-hmm. in the world. The other is their gumbo, which okay. is considered the standard.
That it's the gumbo.
This is Commander's Palace. This is the Brennan family. This is it. And then the third is rotating whatever the other soup is, and sometimes you just get lucky with whatever it might be. But if only for those first two, it's just a destination New Orleans stop for the next time
you're there. Oysters, thumbs up, thumbs down for you.
It, it, they do a lot of different things there. I am a purist when I just need them raw on the half shell with a little bit of horseradish.
I'm good on giant balls of snot coming out of the shell. I'm set on that.
Not interested.
I don't need to mess with that. I try. I'm not
Acme interested. Oyster Bar is.
But have you had them grilled or fried, though?
Oh, yeah. Grilled or fried. All Hell yeah. Sure. Yeah, good. Ball of snot is not my thing.
You know where I've had the actually South Carolina, Calabash style, the South Carolina coast, and you would probably have had this near Myrtle Beach.
Likely.
There's some Calabash-style seafood places there from the Gullah Geechee traditions, and the fried.
I don't think you're pronouncing that correctly.
I'm not. No. The South.
I've never heard the word before, but there's no way you pronounce that correctly.
That can't be. Right.
I believe it's Gullah Geechee. G-U-L-L-A-H. It had to do with a certain African colony in the West Indies that ended up with people in South Carolina. But anyway, their fried oyster sandwich. I don't think they call it a po' boy because it's not the Louisiana thing, but it is a thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now I'm starving.
Yep. Now I'm really hungry.
Damn it.
Well, I'm stuck in the studio. Like, I'm going next door because I'm on ESPNU radio from whatever it is, like 12 to 3. So I'm not going to be able to eat at all. All I got in my bag is a Clif Bar and a bottle of water.
We'll get you some delivery or something like that.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.